Hey, everybody, this is Flavio Romeo, and on this episode of the Towncast, this is part two of our two-part series featuring John Gray, a local resident who shares his story about when he climbed Mount Everest, along with several other mountains. So this is part two. If you missed part one, please go back, scroll down, and you'll see part one. All right, enjoy the episode, everybody.
We got stormed on, and you know, we just ran out.
You felt like you wanted something.
Yeah. So we actually went back and tried it again. And
did you do it?
No, we didn't.
Still, it just wore you out.
We made it to 14 again, and
wow,
we actually
brutal.
Made it up. The first trip we did from the 14, we did make a carry up to 16. We put some gear up at 16, and came back. On the second trip, we actually made it past 17. We made it to almost 18,000.
Wow. And how tall is it?
That's 20,320.
Oh, it's got to be like, it's so close. I mean,
yeah.
You know.
Well, because it's higher up on the globe.
Yeah.
The atmosphere thins.
Yeah.
The poles.
Yeah.
So they say, you know.
What percentage of oxygen is it at that height? Like, I know that, you know, Adam was saying, I think it's like 50% or something. Like, you're operating at 50 or 40%.
At the summit of Everest, there's a third of the oxygen.
A third. 33% of the oxygen that we're breathing right now.
Yeah.
Could you feel that? Like, I know that, you know, you climatize and you're getting used to it as you're going slowly. But did you feel like when you're at that high level, like, I got to slow down. I can't breathe right.
Yeah. And, you know, You burn oxygen and food. You metabolize these things for energy to move forward.
Yeah.
If you can't get enough oxygen, a lot of times I felt like sometimes I was out of breath, but a lot of times you're just, you know, it's like an engine that's being starved of fuel.
Yeah.
You're not really going that fast and you're just lethargic and you're going slow.
That's why when you see the videos, like, no one's running.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's very slow pace, slow, you know, because you have to pace yourself.
Yeah.
How long was the whole Everest climb, like start to finish?
Start to finish, like from airport to airport in the States was 75 days.
75 days?
Yeah.
I know it's just like 3 or 4 days just to get there.
Yeah, you come back, people are older.
You missed everybody's birthdays.
They've had kids.
You're married 2 years. What happened?
They got married.
75 days.
Yeah.
Wow.
And people are trying to do it. It's always been this, like, if you're doing Everest or any other 8,000 meter peak, there's 14 peaks that are 8,000 meters and above. It's like 2 months. 2 months, 2 months, 2 months. But
right. That's
kind of changing. Like, people are using oxygen tank, oxygen tents, or oxygen chambers.
Did you have oxygen as you were climbing up Everest?
We used supplemental bottled oxygen.
Obviously, not the oxygen around you.
Yeah.
When you got to a certain height, you need it. I mean.
Yeah. The basically it's only on your summit.
The last summit cycle. Yeah. So let's talk about the summit, because I know. It's not like, oh, today we're going to summit. It's going to be like an hour and a half and we're there.
Yeah.
So what was that final climb to the top? Talk about that a little bit.
Well, so we'd done our, you know, I can go into this more, but we'd done our initial climbs up and back and up and back, and you're going a little higher each time. So on this final trip up the mountain, you skip camp one, you go to camp two. We stayed over a night there, and the way this year went was there was a lot of storms, a lot of high winds throughout the season. The season is basically April and May.
That's
roughly.
It.
Roughly. Yeah, that's the spring season. Some people climb in the fall too, but so there was a question of a lot of people, a lot of times the Sherpas have already been to the summit, like before some of the other climbers are going up. But no Sherpas hadn't been up there, no big teams have been up there yet. We were kind of a smaller team. So, you know, are the ropes put in yet? How's the weather looking? We've gotten reports that the weather is going to be pretty good on these few days. So then you have to leave a few days before that.
Right. So you hit it right.
Yeah. So I have a picture in my slideshow of us sitting at Camp 2 having a little meeting. And there was a team of six of us, and different people had different illnesses throughout the trip, and Dan spoke up and said, I think tomorrow I'm going to get up. We're at Camp 2. I'm going to get up, pack up my stuff, and I'm going to head down. That's it. And it's also very late. It's late May. It's towards the end of May now. And we were ready to summit in early to mid-May.
Wow.
So, because you can do these trips up, even if the weather up high is bad, you can still climb lower on the mountain and be acclimatizing. So then his partner said, yeah, I'm gonna head down. And then the other two said, yeah, I'm gonna head down too. So then it's just me and Rob, and I'm thinking,
they're looking at each other like, what do we do?
Yeah, I'm like, there's I had no question. I mean,
you were determined. You wanted to get to the
yeah.
top.
Rob was on his second attempt at Everest.
Okay.
One of the guys was on his fourth attempt.
Wow.
Another guy was on his third.
And this is your first.
Yeah, this is my first time. And we had already been up to Camp 3 for one night previously. And I had no, you know, I'm not always very sure of myself, but I thought, for sure, we're going to go to Camp 3, stay over. We're going to go to Camp 4. Camp 4 is in what they call the South Col. And I've heard about it. I've seen pictures of it. If I can just go up to the South Col and camp a night,
you're good.
And if the weather doesn't look good, if not a lot, you know, it's a lot of people looking around, seeing what other people are doing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the bigger teams, the more experienced, like the guides who have been there 10, 20 times. If people aren't going up, then at least I can come back and tell my buddies back home, hey, I saw the South Col. It's
I got,
every bit of nightmare
they do. Think.
So, and then it's just, you know, take it piece by piece and don't, you know.
Well, you definitely can't rush anything like that.
Yeah. And, you know, we didn't want to, like, beg anyone to change their mind because, you know, what if something happens to them? Yeah. They go. A couple of the guys hadn't made it to Camp 3. One of them hadn't, you know, people were sick and they miss a whole trip up the mountain. And then, so we end up spending a couple nights at Camp 2. Just kind of waiting on the weather and waiting on what other teams are doing. The ropes are going in this day. And so then we go up to Camp 3, and that's when, because you're on your summit cycle, and you can't really acclimatize truly above anything above 20,000 feet. You're not really acclimatizing.
Yeah, I can imagine. You're not supposed to be up that high.
Yeah.
No human is supposed to be up that high.
Yeah. It's just it's a matter of degrees. Like, if you're as acclimatized as you can get.
Yeah.
And it's just from 20,000 to 29,000, you just try to survive, you know? On previous trips, we wouldn't use oxygen because you're trying to acclimatize.
Sure.
But now you're like, okay, we're as acclimatized as we're going to be. Now we need we need the extra help. So you go to Camp 3 and then you're not using oxygen yet. But as when you go to sleep at 3, you put on the oxygen. You sleep, you get a good night's sleep. And then use oxygen from 3 to 4.
Now, are you carrying the tanks? Is that how?
Yeah, you carry the tanks.
Like scuba diving kind of tanks?
Yeah, it's just, you just throw it in the pack and the hose is coming out.
Yeah.
Comes out of the top of your pack, around your arm, with a mask. So then you use it from 3 to 4, and then we get to Camp 4, and the deal there, like when I was talking before about the alpine start, like on a Shasta or Rainier, you got to get up at 1 a.m., maybe 2. But here, you're so high up and it takes so long because you're going slow. You're leaving the day before. You have to climb all night. You have to pull an all-nighter just to get up there in any kind of reasonable hour.
So how awake were you? Like, how long were you awake from the start of that? Was this the final climb?
This is the summit push.
Yeah.
You know, the summit cycle.
Yeah, yeah. So how many hours were you awake for that push?
Well, later on when we came back down, I finally went back to sleep at Camp 4. I figured out that I was probably awake for like 40 hours.
40 hours?
Or 44 hours.
How are you not exhausted? Is it adrenaline? Yeah, was it the oxygen?
I'll show you one of the pictures I have when I got back to Camp 4.
40 hours.
You know, like you're asking before, like, what were some things that surprised me or whatever.
By the way, do you have one of those summit pictures? One of those, you're on the summit of Everest, you have one of those?
Yeah.
All right, good, because we want to show that.
I forgot to take my, you know, you have so much stuff on it.
I don't think anybody's going to hold that against you.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what were, like, the challenges that you couldn't even imagine?
Well, we get up to Camp 4, probably 2 p.m. And then the idea is to try to nap a little bit, and then you leave that night. And I'd read stories and books and where people are like, you get up to 26,000 feet at Camp 4, and you can't eat, you can't drink. But we got up there, and we're like,
I'm losing my oxygen right now just listening to your story.
But we got up there, and we're like, yeah, we're chugging water, and some of the other climbers that didn't elect to go try for the summit, we had a lot of their food because their food was brought up by the Sherpas earlier, and so we're just like pigging out, you know, granola bars, and then you just kind of chill out, change our socks, and you know, get in our sleeping bags and just wait. But then as the afternoon, you know, turns into early evening, the winds start picking up. Mm. And it's just, I mean, the tent's being blown around, and we're sitting there going like, because Rob had not been up this high on his first trip. He had tried it in 2000, so not, this is 2005. And you're like, is this normal? Is this acceptable?
Yeah,
you know, like, is this Everest?
Nobody, yeah, yeah.
The South Col is like a, you know, the Venturi effect of the wind, like coming,
it's coming up over and blowing it. Yeah.
You look at it and it's all up close. It's rough. There's rocks like this everywhere.
But you look at it, it looks rounded, right?
It's a rounded thing. So I think we dozed a little bit. And then at like 8 p.m., our head Sherpa, named Apa Sherpa, he comes over and he says, he's like, well, let's see, you know, we'll see. And he leaves. And then at 9 o'clock, Appa says, let's go. So Appa Sherpa is, at that point, he was on his attempt to do his 15th and or 16th. And the last, he's the Guinness World Record holder for the most summits of anyone.
Really?
And this is a while ago. Now there's, I think he stopped at 20. But so he's seen it all. He's climbed with everybody. So he said, we'll give it a shot. So 9:30, we're walking out of camp. And I'm thinking, you know, I'd read Into Thin Air like twice, plus a bunch of other stuff.
Yeah.
And I remember, you know, we're getting a good early start. And we're looking around the South Col. There was a number of teams up there. And nobody else was going. So we said, well, we'll give it a shot. So we go up and we get about 20 minutes up. You're heading up this area they call the triangular face. And at one point I started to actually overheat a little bit. I had a big down suit. And so I unzip and I turn around and look down. I see all these headlamps coming up after us.
Oh, so you guys made everybody brave.
Yeah, we were thinking.
You're blazing the trail.
People are waiting around to see, like,
who's going to go? Are we going to go?
Yeah, I mean, not that, you know, we set the tone or anything, but, like, people are like, well, I guess, you know.
If you're going,
you know,
we'll
it's
go.
Kind of the group mentality.
Yeah.
So I think there was one person, we saw him much later, there was one single person out ahead of us. Then there was Appa, and then there was me. So I was the third person up, and you've heard about overcrowding and lines at the top and everything. There wasn't as many crowds with us because the season had dragged on for so long. So this is the night of May 30th.
So you're at the tail end.
Yeah. Right. So a lot of people just kind of dropped off, and run out of time, or just, you know, exhausted or sick. So we're out ahead. We're not going to get stuck behind people. We have time on our side. So, but it's, I mean, all you have your oxygen mask on. I got these clear goggles at the bargain bin at REI, like the $10 bin. I'm like, I'm going to grab, you know, these cheap goggles. So I had clear goggles. And all you can see is your headlamp, and the snow's blowing sideways. I don't think it was really snowing, but it's just so windy. And
the Sherpa was leading it. I mean, he knows the way. So
yeah,
because I would, you know, even with the snow blowing, it's how do you see the trail? And
yeah, well, there are fixed ropes.
Oh, okay.
There's fixed ropes pretty much all the way, a little bit beyond the Hillary Step, and then they just kind of run out. But we, before, you know, a couple of weeks prior to this, we put names in a hat. We picked all these Sherpa names. And we said, each climber gets paired with a Sherpa, and you stick to each other like glue.
Yeah.
So there's none of this, like, people getting scattered and separated and all the way here.
Sure.
And you
yeah,
go on
yeah.
ahead and then come back. And then pretty soon you've lose track of, is somebody above me or somebody below me, you know? So we, like myself and Rob, we climb at different, you know, if we're climbing at different paces, then I'm with my Sherpa, he's with his Sherpa. I think there was a couple of Sherpas with him. Then Appa's the Sirdar, the lead Sherpa that had headed the whole trip. He was out in front, and so we're just trudging along, and then we get to this area they call the balcony, which you're on the face for a while, and then you kind of get onto the ridge. It's the Southeast Ridge route, but you're not on the ridge right away. Yeah, so we're on the balcony, and Appa turns around, and he goes like this, everybody sit down. So we at that point you change tanks. You switch to a new tank. And we got that done, and then we're just sitting there, and I'm like, you know, pretty warm, you know, but the more you sit there, you start cooling down. And I just had the impression that maybe Appa wasn't sure if he should still, if he's leading us to our doom or not. And, you know, so I stood up and went over to Appa and I said, "Appa, how you doing? How you feeling?" He's like, "I'm good." So I said, I'm plenty warm. I'm feeling good." So I didn't want him to, if he was worried, you know, he can make it, and my Sherpa, Dawa,
right?
Like, they can make it. But the unknown is, how is the members, the climb sure. going to be? So I was just filling him in, like, "I'm good to go." So he's like, "Okay." So we all stood up, and we just kept going. So then you come to the South Summit, and there you normally... We'll switch to a fresh tank there because you need a tank to get across the ridge, up the Hillary Step to the summit, and all the way back down. And then you can switch back to your old tank, and that'll be enough to get down. So you know, another thing is like the Hillary Step. You hear about this, you know, this technical climbing challenge, you know, at 28,000, you know, 800 feet or something. And there's after a number, you know, season after season, there's old ropes there. There's the new rope, but sometimes you can't tell. So I'm clipped into the rope, and I grabbed all the old ropes and just pulled myself up a couple of big steps, and then you're up on this like little flat area.
Is it daytime? Like, can you see now?
Yeah.
It is, okay.
Then I work my way around. You don't go all the way up and over this rock formation. There's a little break in it. And you can kind of tiptoe around the side of it, and then you climb up the back of it, and it's like, it wasn't that big of a deal. And
once you got there,
it changes from year to year based on how much snow they had, if it's packed in, or if there's not as much snow on it, it might be different.
So when you finally got to the top, how was it when, like, just looking over the world, like the earth, how was that feeling?
Well, as soon as you get around the Hillary Step, I was, you know, the whole trip I'm thinking, like, just from the moment I got invited to go, it was like, maybe I have a 50-50 shot. And I wasn't like, I'm setting a goal and I'm going to summit. You know, it was like, I'm going to go
as far as I can go.
I'm going to do the process.
Yeah.
And if we make it, we make it.
Yeah.
You know, if we do everything right, it'll fall into place, maybe.
And it did.
So once we got around the Hillary Step, and you look out, and there's just kind of a snow ramp. It's like slanted, and there's nothing really. There's nothing technical. And that moment, I knew
you got it.
We're gonna make it.
Ah, what a feeling!
And the whole mountain is behind you. All the training, all the stuff is literally, figuratively behind you.
What was the biggest, biggest challenge? Like, what did you feel like? Something that happened that you may not have expected, or of any of your mountains. So you've climbed the three, right?
Yeah.
You've climbed Kilimanjaro, Denali, and Everest.
Yeah.
Of the three, which one was the most challenging to you? I know there's different reasons, different aspects of it, but where do you feel like, I don't even want to do that one again?
Well,
or maybe there isn't.
I would do them like over again.
You do them all again. What about the other four?
I mean, Denali I've done four times, so I...
Oh, wow. You're a veteran.
I have a sickness with that one.
What about the other four continents? No desire to tackle
seven? No, I, you know, if I got the chance to go try those. Because I never really set out to do the seven summits, but now I've done three.
You're almost halfway
two
there.
Two of the
You did hardest. The toughest ones.
Yeah.
I heard the one in Australia is like, what, 4,000 feet?
Yeah, like, you can just do that on vacation.
You should hook up with Adam.
Adam's do that gonna, one in flip-flops.
Adam's going to do that in September.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't imagine. You know, you tackled the three toughest mountains.
Yeah.
So what would be anybody that's watching or listening, what would be your recommendation, your sage advice?
I'd say, you know, get into climbing and mountaineering and, you know, do some lower peaks, start off very small. Mount Hood in Oregon is like 10,000 feet. Do some 14ers, do the Shastas, Rainier. Work your way up. Like, if you want to try to do Everest, Denali is good training ground for that. You hear stories about people who are, they have a bucket list, and they're like, they may not even be into mountaineering, but they want to do Everest.
Right.
And so, yeah, they'll do some training trips here and there, and then they'll go and try Everest.
You're setting yourself up for failure.
You don't have that, and I'm not a professional climber by any means, but I was just immersed in it. I was doing all these different things, and going to the Himalayas first, going to Denali, going back to Denali, and then trying Everest. You have a lot of experience and just muscle memory, and
right,
being able to push through at certain times. But you gotta, if you get into it and you like it, you're gonna naturally just keep doing it and picking different objectives. Maybe go to the Himalayas and do a trek. You know,
start from the ground up.
Yeah,
you can't start from zero and go to 28,000 feet.
Yeah.
Now, do you have any kind of a website or Instagram that people, if they have questions, or they want to say, hey, no,
not really.
Right, well, send them to me.
I'm on Facebook, but
you are okay. So yeah, people can find you if they.
Yeah.
If they want to message you and say, hey, I saw this and yeah, I'm interested in it.
Yeah, I gotta set up some other stuff.
Yeah. I mean, you're the first person, the only person I know that ever climbed Mount Everest. Now I know two people that climbed Kilimanjaro.
Yeah.
So, I'm sure there's a lot.
You're basically in the club.
Yeah. I'm on this side of the camera. So listen, if you guys have any questions or, you're concerned about stuff or you want some sage advice, either find John on Facebook or send it to me and I'll relay it to John. And obviously you love it. It's something you enjoy or you wouldn't have climbed Denali four times.
Yeah.
and it's something that you do. I mean, would you say that you encourage people, if it's something that they want to do, you encourage them to go after it? Start small, work your way up and achieve those goals.
Yeah. People have trekked to Everest Base Camp and then they've gone on to try Everest. When you're in base camp, you can't see the summit, but you can go up Kalpatar and you get a spectacular view of Everest.
Really? Just the view has got to be amazing.
Yeah. Kalpatar is, you don't need any special gear. And that's like 18,000 feet. That's higher than anywhere.
And you don't need gear? Special gear?
No, a pack and warm clothes, but you can do it in high top,
really?
Hiking, light hiker boots.
Wow.
That's a lot of people don't realize you're in base camp, you can't, it looks like you're looking at Everest, but Everest is behind.
Behind it, and taller.
But before you get to base camp, you go up Kalpatar. A lot of the classic shots of Everest are taken from Kalpatar. And that's 18,000 feet. You can do that trip. You can climb these lower peaks, 20,000 footers. And then, people are doing the seven summits. A lot of times they save Everest until the end.
Yeah.
But
you knock that off. You knock that off right away.
Yeah. I think I think on the north side of Everest now, they require that you've done at least like a 6,000 meter peak and a 7,000 meter peak. And even sometimes like one of the, you know, Everest the tallest obviously, but there's other peaks that are above 8,000 meters, but they're just barely above it.
Right.
Like Chaoyu. So you do one of those, you know, that's more time and money, but if you're committed, you'll
do it.
You'll figure it out. Yeah. You know.
Well, listen, I really appreciate your time.
Sure.
Thank you for sharing everything. And, you know, listen, you only have four left. And you got the four, probably not the easiest.
Yeah.
But you've tackled, you know, the three toughest.
Yeah. The rest are...
Except for Antarctica. I mean, just the idea of climbing anything in Antarctica to me sounds... But if you did Denali, I would imagine it's similar climate, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's I'd be pretty interested in trying Vinson Antarctica.
Yeah.
Just because it's such a wild, foreign landscape.
Yeah. And no one lives there.
Yeah.
Well, keep us posted. If you do, you let us know. We'll get you back on. We'll do it before and after.
Yeah.
Yeah? John, thank you so much. I appreciate
it. No problem. Yeah.
And again, listen, if you're interested, you can always send us an email at comments@thetowncast.com. Look up John Gray on Facebook and ask him, you know, questions if you're serious about it. And there's a lot of great advice here. And I encourage you, if it's something you're into, just do it the right way. Train, you know, read a lot of books. Now you have Google. You can Google stuff. There's YouTube videos.
YouTube University.
Yeah, YouTube University. Right, exactly. And do your research before you attempt something like this. It's definitely not for the faint of heart. I like to watch the videos of it. I would not want to climb it myself. But I give you a lot of credit.
You're
Thanks
done.
Again. I appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Be well, everybody.